Hello and welcome to another episode of the Faultline podcast, the audio companion to the weekly B2B publication analysing disruption in the media and entertainment ecosystem. My name's Tommy Flanagan, I'm the editor of Faultline and your podcast host. And in this episode, we welcome the triumphant return of Gideon Gilboa, Chief Product Officer at LiveView. Welcome back, Giddy. You know, we must be doing something right that you've returned for a second bite of the cherry. Have you got unfinished business here?
For sure. Always unfinished business with you, Tom. It's great to be back.
Great to have you back, Giddy. It's the first time you've had a return guest, so I'm very excited. And if you're listening at home or at work or in the car, wherever you are, and you fired up this episode and you've been struck by a sense of deja vu, then, as I've just mentioned, that's because you've probably listened to the prequel to this episode, and now you're here for the return of Giddy and hopefully to get a comprehensive update on what LiveView's been up to over the last 12 months. So LiveView is a pioneer in IP cellular bonded encoders and a disruptor of the news and sports broadcasting landscape with these very, very neat compact field units. And these have kind of effectively democratized, you know, the ability to deliver high quality video coverage from anywhere, lower cost, greater flexibility. And, you know, LiveView is building some very cool workflows around this hardware, which we're going to dive into shortly. But for anyone who hasn't listened to that original February 2023 episode, the gist of that conversation was that Giddy had very bravely come on to chat with me, despite being only 7 or 8 months into the new role at that time, after being poached by LiveView from Kaltura and swapping the safety of SaaS and cloud-based video for the wild west of hardware in the contribution, production, and distribution of IP video. So here we are, Giddy, almost exactly a year later, February 2024, and I have a bone to pick with you, because when we signed off the previous episode, we were saying that, oh, you hadn't featured enough on the actual pages of Faultline, and so we were going to rectify that by doing an interview and a couple of demos at NAB. And then what happened at NAB? You stood me up.
Oh, my God. I can only comfort you in the fact that you're in good company. I stood up, and a lot of people at NAB, it was a completely crazy show, and I even going to the bathroom was difficult with the amount of traffic we had. But apologies for that, and here I am to apologize in person.
I had to throw that curveball at you straight away. In fairness, yeah, you were roped into a last minute meeting, and I spoke with a very knowledgeable colleague of yours instead, who told me, among other things, that you were supposed to have a playable basketball court on your stand at the Las Vegas Convention Center last year, but that got bounced last minute for probably for health and safety reasons or something. So how are you going to make it up to us this year?
I wanted to actually bring a foosball table this year to the show, but again, my fantasies are one thing, and then the health and safety regulation and whatever union working laws are another thing. So that's not going to happen. I think what happened last time actually was that we took that whole space for more screen real estate, and we're going to do it this year as well. And it was because last year and at NAB, April 23, we launched the LiveView ecosystem, which is essentially a nice name to package a few things that we've been working on for a while until that point, and actually have been working on even more in the last year. You know, you mentioned, Tommy, that we've disrupted the market. You know, initially it was the news market. It was mainly in contribution, right? Contribution was a very complex business. It required a truck with a satellite dish on the roof and five guys. One is a driver, one operates the dish, one prepares the sandwiches, whatever it is. And then LiveView came in, and basically with those backpacks completely disrupted that area. And with the LiveView ecosystem, I think we're doing two things. One is trying to disrupt also production with cloud production and distribution with open IP primary distribution, and we can talk about that. But basically coming in and trying to bring in solutions that are looking at the, you know, to use open IP, lower cost, high resilient technologies based on the same protocol that we've been using so far, to basically make things easier, cheaper, faster, but also to try and do things a little bit different to the way LiveView has been doing things so far. I think LiveView was very, you know, you mentioned hardware, and hardware is an important part of our portfolio. But it used to be that we were a very closed system, right? You would have only, we would only sell you LiveView software between two pieces of LiveView hardware. And with the LiveView ecosystem, that has changed. We've been offering more software capabilities on top of the hardware and separately from the hardware pieces. And also, it used to be that we just support LiveView Reliable Transport, which is our protocol. And at NAB last year, we introduced support of SRT into our ecosystem. And we also show quite a few interesting integrations that we could talk about with partners, which is also something that LiveView was not very well known for. So long story short, we started making this transition, basically realizing that our customers are looking not for more products that we can sell them, but for workflows that will solve the problems, make it easier, faster, cheaper, more flexible, whatever it is. And this ecosystem with our technologies, with third-party technologies, is designed to help create those workflows for them.
I'm glad you mentioned from NAB last year about introducing SRT streams into your products, because kind of second to that was the kind of discussion about whether to open source the LiveView Reliable Transport protocol, given the momentum that SRT experienced after being released into GitHub 2017 by Hivvision as the open source stack, and the huge momentum it got from that, you know. And that's not surprising in itself, but what is notable, Giddy, is that this time last year, you know, there were kind of suggestions from you about the monetization limitations in the open source strategy, and you were a little bit kind of skeptical about that. So I just wondered, where are you now in that sort of debate, to open source or not to open source? Is that still the question, or are you keeping that box shut?
Yeah, no, I think on that front, nothing has changed in our approach. Basically, we feel that, you know, multiple IP protocols have room and space in the market. We feel that ours is highly optimized for cellular bonding. And it's clearly, based on the feedback we get from the market, probably the best out there. And we see that as a competitive advantage, and we're not going to open source that. But at the same time, we feel that, you know, if you want to help your customers and yourself become a leader in IP video, you have to open up your systems to support other protocols. So the ability to receive one protocol and come out on the other end with another protocol, or to you know, receive not just LRT, is important for us, and that's what we've been focusing on, rather than, you know, necessarily opening up the LRT. We are, and we have been, and we will continue to, especially when it comes to cloud production, allow more and more companies who want to receive LRT to be able to do that more easily. But that's not necessarily an open source strategy. It's more of an easier integration strategy.
So with your products now supporting SRT, is there a hope that the likes of Hivvision and co. will start supporting LRT?
I'm not sure. Not sure it's going to happen, if I had to guess. But I would say that we are for sure going to, and we are already in multiple discussions. Anyone who has cloud production systems, and we have some people, you know, we are also a player in this space, but. You know, I don't believe in blocking people who might or might not be competitors. So anyone who would want to receive LRT in their cloud, ultimately, you know, with a proprietary code from LiveView with the right business model or engine will be able to do that, regardless of who they are.
I'm going to come on to one of your recent deals shortly. But before that, I just wanted to mention that this time last year, you were talking about how LiveView was at a sort of inflection point in a transition period. And since then, you've also sat on a Faultline panel session. That was in June last year, where we were discussing the very doom and gloom, but interesting topic of recession economies, where you kind of essentially said in a roundabout way that recessions are basically good for business, for a company like LiveView, and that your lower end units were just flying off the shelves. So, I mean, do you expect those trends to continue through 2024 and you build on that momentum, or are you focusing elsewhere now? The 2024 US elections is surely a huge priority.
Yeah, I mean, I think 2024, at least from what we are seeing, is here. And by the way, since, you know, last time we talked, I was in Tel Aviv. I'm now based in New York. We can talk more about that later. But, you know, we're seeing actually a different type of momentum, I think, in 2024 in a positive way. Yes, U.S. election is part of that. There's actually 50 different election campaigns worldwide this year. There's Olympics. There is Euro. You know, in general, even years are good for broadcasts, both news and sports, more than uneven years. So, and I think one other thing that happened talking to various customers and people who look at the industry, and I don't know if you agree, but there was during COVID, people were over-equipping themselves with stuff because they thought, oh, the world is going to change, and well, has changed it to a certain degree, but you know, they almost overbought equipment and technology. And I think what we saw last year was the sort of normalization deep of that post-COVID era, meaning people didn't need much more technology and capabilities because they already had that from the 2020, 2021, and to a certain extent, beginning of 2022 cycles. And we're seeing that coming up back again. So I think actually, at least for us, based on the way the year started, 2024 is going to be a much stronger year, I think, for the industry as a whole. We all know elections are not going to be disappointing or boring, at least not here in the US, at least from a media coverage perspective.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you also mentioned some major sporting events there, and obviously some of the biggest broadcasters in the world are your customers. But that's got me wondering whether, you know, are you seeing more business come in from sort of independent content creators and YouTubers? Is that an emerging business line for you, or are the LiveView field units, would you still say they're considered quite high end and maybe too expensive?
So it's a good question. We have, first of all, we are seeing, I think we are seeing demand and across all market segments. So of course, for us, broadcast news and sports are very strong and robust segments, but we've had for years now, and even more since last year, public safety customers that use video for situational awareness and other things. You know, this has actually has been a growing business for us. Enterprises, you know, the famous saying, I think, I don't remember who coined it, but every company is a media company. So, you know, we have large enterprise customers that use video. And yes, also, I would say content creators and others. We have product line that we call LiveView Solo, which is actually a low-end version. It's not as sophisticated or as expensive as the professional level gear that we have. And it is used among other people, used by a very small, you know, mom and pop production companies, but also like IRL content creators, the Twitch community, a bunch of influencers, especially those that are like wandering around. And it's actually nice to see there are some companies we work with that are reselling our gear in this space that have created these amazing kits for these influencers. So you have your backpack, your mini, you know, 4K, HD, whatever camera, your tripod, you know, everything is like put in together with the live view gear. And, you know, people basically create those kits and sell them to those influencers that want to go outside and do bungee jumping, take videos of themselves, all sorts of things that I don't do, basically.
And that's where LiveView is in such a great sort of position. Not only you've got these huge legacy news outfits as customers, but also you can supply the content creators who are then disrupting them. So you're serving, you know, both sides of the coin. And I think that puts you in a real great position to kind of survive all the disruption that's going to happen over the next decade and more of, with user-generated content. But as I mentioned, 2024 got off to a strong start. You announced a deal in January with BT's media and broadcast wing about combining the proprietary LRT protocol with BT's London-based distribution network. And the kind of significance of that deal was all about the interoperability that we've already touched on, you know, that, how that allows the LiveView customers to deliver content to smaller broadcasters which don't have these master control rooms and are not already using LRT or any of your transmission or decoding products. So presumably then the idea here is to kind of gradually get these smaller customers, the broadcasters, familiar with your products and the protocol, and then gradually get them, you know, accustomed, and when they grow, you grow with them and sort of become this kind of de facto technology and protocol, I suppose. Is that the strategy?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I think we are as I guess every company should, we're digging the tunnel from both ends, in the sense that for largest broadcasters and media companies, we are these are still the times where they're looking to move to reduce costs and become more nimble and to have more flexibility, and we are actually coming in and replacing some legacy technologies. So, you know, a good example is, and you mentioned that BT deal that has to do with primary distribution as well. And a good example is our LiveView Matrix solution that is basically used by companies, large broadcasters, to replace fiber and satellite as means for distribution between stations, between different media organizations. And over there, we have a growing amount of deployments because people can trust the internet more than they could before. And, you know, it basically costs like a third of what a fiber line would cost you. And you need that broadband internet anyways. So it's not like you're buying special bandwidth for this. So, and that's something we see on the one hand with large customers. And again, they're relying on our LRT protocol and on the fact that that we can be as reliable as fiber, even sometimes more, depending on the topology. And then you have the smaller customers that are coming in and saying, and some of them are, for example, tier three rights holders. So a good example would be Volleyball World. You know, they're doing their organization that does the global championship for beach volleyball around the world. And they've been using LiveView for a while in all of their events, including LiveView Matrix, to distribute their content. So they've been using our units and everything to cover the production, but then to distribute the content to takers. So they're using the fact that LiveView Matrix is connected to any one of our 5,000 customers, and essentially if you have a LiveView receiver, you can connect to this network and distribute and share content between people. You know, so they don't basically don't have to do anything but to look at our global directory, find the people that they have rights agreements with, and at a click of a button, they can send them the live stream. So, yeah, so we're trying, I guess, and as they grow, we will probably have more and more business with these guys. And so we're trying to dig the tunnel from both ends.
Very cool. And part of that tunnel, last time we spoke, you were lauding LiveView's acquisition of EasyLive, which was a strategic move to kind of complete the value chain from contribution to distribution by adding production tools. And EasyLive has since been renamed the LiveView Studio, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong. And that's tools such as video switching, audio mixing, graphics, localized content, guest features, and that's all integrated as a workflow, of course, harnessing LRT. So I wondered, kind of for an update, has this integration and assimilation plugged the production gap in the way that you thought it would? Or now that you have all these production tools, is there an element that, oh, you've opened up that can of worms and all of a sudden you're seeing more gaps in the portfolio that you're keen to plug? In other words, Giddy, I'm asking you, where are you acquiring next?
So first of all, it's true that, you know, not so long after we met, we've launched LiveView Studio, which was the reincarnation of EasyLive within the LiveView ecosystem and an integration. And the first time we've actually delivered, going back to our earlier conversation, LRT natively into a cloud production studio. And basically, that has worked well for us, and we've seen adoption from quite a few customers. We had joint customers with EasyLive before, but new customers, both on the news and sports side. I think I would say a few things. First of all, we have this is a SaaS product that gets updates and upgrades every few months or every month, you should say. But, you know, so we've seen, if you ask about gaps, we've elevated the level of the product that was not necessarily broadcast grade in terms of the feature set, to something that is more broadcast grade and would be more familiar to people who run like traditional switchers, in terms of transitions, in terms of playlists, in terms of again the integration with our entire ecosystem. So with every product you launch, and we've had to close some gaps in order to win some deals, and that I think helps advance the product a lot. But going back to your question, you never know in these spaces, but I'm pretty sure we will continue in 2024 to expand our ecosystem with non-organic acquisitions. I think that the world of IP video in general is becoming more and more complex, and you need more pieces in the puzzle to offer better solutions to your customers. So we're definitely looking at options.
Okay. Can you give us a little teaser about where that might come? Is that going to be in the production world?
I can't go into detail, unfortunately, but we're looking at everything across contribution, production, and distribution, and so it's not necessarily going to be only in one of those areas, but production is certainly a big. I think if you look at the amount of live production that is happening, and remote production that is happening over the last couple of years, it's definitely a growth area that we're also looking at.
I'll see if I can prize any more out of you at NAB then. Until then, you know, one of the gaps I kind of identify, particularly in the discussion around cloud production, is, you know, while it has presented this huge, amazing opportunity to migrate, you know, more efficient content workflows, it has created this sort of need. Some people think it's a quite an urgent need for a more dedicated security architecture. You know, how the sheer pace of change, which is of course catalyzed by the pandemic, that's created a lot of vulnerabilities in content protection. So we didn't actually touch on this last time out. So I was curious to ask Giddy kind of your take on LiveU's approach to security and whether that's a proprietary in-house architecture, or do you use third-party content protection, or a mixture of both?
Yeah. So first of all, I think for us, security is a really important topic. I would say, as an anecdote, I was talking to a CTO of one of our, I'd say, larger, not maybe largest, but larger customers a few weeks ago, and I asked him, "So what's your top of mind for 2024?" And you always, as a product guy, you always want him to say, "Well, I want to launch this new capability to whatever, and that it exactly fits to things that we are doing." But to my disappointment, he said security, and specifically cybersecurity. And I think that in the world that we live in, and especially in an elections year, and especially with news organizations, they're actually many of them are under constant cyber attacks. And so no wonder security has become a primary concern for them. And as a result, also for us, so we constantly invest in the space. I think it was only maybe 2 years ago that LiveU appointed a CISO, like a chief information security officer that reports to our CIO. We are ISO, I forget the number, but ISO certified, for the security framework. We're investing quite a lot in hardening our authentication authorization capabilities for the system. Which is taking capacity, development capacity from developing other nice features. And as far as technology, we don't use our own anything proprietary in that space. From our, we use we would use AES encryption on our units for those who want to operate it, and we would use standard tools for cloud security and whatever So nothing that we develop in-house, but we spend quite a lot of time implementing those, because we feel the need, and we feel the pressure and the importance from our customers.
And on the transport protocol front, RIST, the Reliable Internet Stream Transport Protocol, kind of claims to be the most secure of all the transport protocols, and it's really emphasized the cybersecurity angle in the last few years. For example, opening up a secure connection between two sites in the form of a tunnel or a VPN, and it's got key rotation as a backup security measure. But on the other hand, I go onto the LRT page on the LiveU website, and I don't see security mentioned once, Giddy. So, despite what you just said, is that a kind of afterthought with the LRT protocol?
It's an interesting point. First of all, maybe I need to talk to our marketing folks to upgrade the website. But kidding aside, we have not seen any attacks or I used to work for NDS, right, which was about conditional access and DRM way back when. Before it was ever seen in media or anything like that, and you always learn that the attack comes on the weakest link in the chain. And at the times of NDS, I remember everybody said no one is actually hacking the smart card, because that was like highly protected, and NDS invested millions of dollars in making sure that the chip is very secure. So what they did is, they looked at, they used internet that then started coming out, and were trying to hack or to sniff for the control words that go into the card and hijack those. So in a certain way, at LiveU we are the same in that LRT luckily has not been the point for the attacks. I think part of it is because it is security by obscurity. Because what LRT does is, of course, it takes apart the video into multiple chunks and delivers it over different cellular networks. So it's very hard for someone to, even if they hacked it in some way, to actually understand what's going on. So at least, so we encrypt the transport of the video over LRT, but if customers want, you can easily activate it as a customer. But we don't necessarily see a lot of, there are no, special security features in LRT itself. And again, it's in accordance with the level of threats that we see, or where we see the threats, I should say.
Security by obscurity. That's such a nice little phrase to have in your back pocket. And you didn't even know I was going to throw that question at you. You just pulled that one out.
See, I will trademark this immediately. So before this podcast goes on air, we can use it.
I can see why you got that big fancy office now, Giddy, with lines like that. But I just wanted to bring up one quote from our last chat, actually, because it's one that struck me. You said, Giddy, consumers are accepting video at lower quality. And I thought that message is great, because it's just, so polarized to pretty much every video technology company's core mantra, and the billions of dollars that have been invested in improving video quality, including at LiveView. So it was a really interesting quote. But of course, the context of that quote was that we were talking about the smartphone generation and how people are breaking news from the streets now just with their phones, just with a cell phone, and how people have become multi-millionaire content creators just by using a smartphone, and quality has been impacted by that to an extent, because people aren't using professional grade cameras, and not to mention the epidemic of vertical video. But do you stand by that quote, Giddy? And if so, what is kind of LiveView doing to improve that video quality angle, that's being degraded by these shaky phone footage?
Yeah, it's interesting. First of all, yes, I do stand by this quote, and I think, again, as you say, it's relevant in specific context, and the context today, I think, LiveView, if you look at the start of LiveView in the news segment, today's LiveView quality, if you look at a feed from, a correspondent's home, with LiveView and the feed in the studio, you won't see a difference. I mean, we can go up to 4K and whatever, But in the old days, I'm told, I wasn't at LiveView, I'm told it was a pretty significant difference. We had maybe a couple of 3G modems, shaky 3G modems, and the first LiveView devices were even Windows-based, so, 15 years ago. Still, people said, I'd rather have pictures from the street here, even if the quality is not great, than not have them at all. So I think in the news space, that's still very much the case. At the same time, what I see happening is a few things. First of all, those devices are getting amazing, right? And the amount of AI technology that you have embedded in those to correct all this amateur stuff that we do when we're holding the camera incorrectly or shaking or whatever it is getting amazing. So I think cameras on those devices will become better and better, and will help that. And then there are technologies on the other side. I know we showed some prototypes of how we use some NVIDIA SDKs for on the server side for AI-based correction enhancement of video that maybe did not arrive in the best quality from the field because there was limited bandwidth or whatever. So I think we will see more of that as well to continue to enhance the quality, as well as, we constantly work on our, we invest time in lower latency, higher color density, the latest and greatest GPU-based encoding and so on. So I think quality will just go up over time, but there's still large segments By the way, speaking of public safety, they don't care about quality at all. Like they don't care. They just want to see the picture as long as it's clear, you know, that there is someone out there and whatever they're doing with situational awareness, then, you know, quality is not that important.
Of course, yeah. And on a final note, Giddy, you know, I want to talk about this year's NAB. But going back to last year's NAB before that, I remember you described the North Hall as the money-making hall. And another great quote of yours that I enjoyed so much that I used in a headline, I stole that. and that, again, that struck me because it was such a contrast from the difference, you know, between, you know, the glitz and glamour of all these pro AV vendors in the North Hall and the, you know, the brutal consolidation that was, you know, on display in the West Hall. How much money are you going to make in the money-making hall this year?
I hope a lot to justify the huge investment we have to make in these trade shows every year. And there's no way around it. I think that no doubt the industry as a whole is going through consolidation. I think that, but I think that what you find is overall, you know, whatever it is, and with whatever move to more software-centric and more cloud-centric workflows, still for the foreseeable future, those companies that have high-quality hardware and software combined are probably in a better position. With the famous saying, it was when people were moving to digital, right, for advertising was, moving from analog dollars to digital cents, right? So in some ways, right, when you, and I think there's been some companies that have tried to make this transition maybe too fast and found themselves selling, you know, only SaaS, but for, you know, maybe a fraction of what they used to charge before, and it just wasn't sustainable for the amount of people and complexity they have. So I think you can have, I think the sort of magic formula is to, like always in life, I believe in balance. So you have to be balanced, and you have to know, to create, first of all, differentiated and high quality products. And if you have a big base of hardware devices, to monetize that as much as possible, but then to expand with more software and SaaS on top of that. And that's what we're doing. And so far, so good. And I hope this will be another great NAB. I look forward to that. It's my first NAB since I moved to the US. So at least I don't have to travel 17 hours on plane from Israel.
Of course, yeah, yeah. Hopefully, you've got a few more quotes in your back pocket for me that this year's NAB. Unless you stand me up, of course.
No, I can't afford to do that this time.
All right, that's all we got time for today. Thank you for your time once again, Giddy. That was a great update, and thank you everybody at home for listening. I will be at Connected TV World Summit in London in a couple of weeks, and then after that, of course, it's on to Las Vegas for NAB in April. So see you there, hopefully for a game of foosball.
Absolutely, at least some kind of a game. Thank you, Tommy, for having me. Always a pleasure, and looking forward to seeing you there.
Cheers, Giddy. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.